This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
In Zen, we encounter a great deal of talk about freedom and liberation. And yet it is often very unclear just what we are seeking freedom from, what we want to be liberated to do, what that freedom would feel like, and really what would we do with it. So often we are in the position of the proverbial dog chasing the fire truck with very little idea of what would happen if we caught it. At least we think we have some idea what the fire truck looks like. But that is really almost always wrapped up in one another curative fantasy. So trying to get clear about this notion of freedom is usually a matter of trying to cut our way through a thicket of fantasies about the nature of freedom. One particularly beguiling fantasy that I've always enjoyed myself is one articulated by Philip Whalen in the poem that we have hanging in the entryway here, Hymnus ad Patrum Sinensis. And I never get tired of reading that poem, and I'll read it once more for us this morning. And we'll talk a little bit about the picture of freedom that it offers. I praise those ancient Chinamen who left me a few words, usually a pointless joke or a silly question, a line of poetry drunkenly scrawled on the margin of a quick, splashed picture, bug, leaf, caricature of teacher, on paper held together now by little more than ink, their own strength brushed momentarily over it. Their world and several others since gone to hell in a handbasket. They knew it, cheered as it whizzed by, and conked out among the busted spring rain cherry blossom wine jars, happy to have saved us all. I love that poem, and it sort of embodies a kind of Han Shan fantasy of a certain picture of Zen as freedom to wander the hills, write poems, drink wine, hang out with your friends. It's primarily a picture of freedom from all the obligations of bourgeois society, a kind of escape into a seemingly natural state, one of no obligations, of spontaneous creativity, and unlimited chances to get high. In any case, I think that as beguiling as that picture is, we pretty quickly realize that there are not too many versions of actually living that life that work out very well. Weiland himself, if you read David Snyder's biography, Crowded by Beauty, was a brilliant, creative, but quite feckless character who, after attending Reed College on the GI Bill, where he met his fellow poets Gary Snyder and Lew Welsh, had great difficulty ever finding anything that looked like real employment or a real vocation. You know, he would get odd jobs here, he would go be a lookout in the fire service, you know, that was a popular thing for poets to do in those days. But when you read the biography, you sort of get the sense that he spent a lot of time living on couches and in his friends' houses, you know, never quite finding his place. Until, rather late in life, his friend Richard Baker made a monk out of him and moved him into San Francisco Zen Center. And there, all of a sudden, once he was deprived of one version of his freedom, he was suddenly granted a whole other kind of freedom. He lost the freedom of his own time and his own choices, his own volition. He was very rigorous about sticking to the schedule and all that. So he lost the freedom of his old life, but he came into himself as a monk and a priest and a teacher, and even helped run the hospice program that the Zen Center was starting for in response to the AIDS epidemic. So his true freedom was found in structure. And it's a lesson that most of us have to learn, usually the hard way, that what we think of freedom is rarely our friend. And that what we are looking for is the right kind of fit, the right kind of structure that will develop our capacities and allow us to function fully and freely. I think that too often our notions of freedom are freedom from. You know, our notion of freedom is what happens on weekends or vacations. The question that's harder to answer is what's the kind of freedom of expression we find in right livelihood, in work. I believe I'm correct in saying that for Karl Marx, labor under capitalism was intrinsically alienated. It was soulless factory work, was the paradigm of work. And that the kind of freedom that was to be hoped for after a revolution was the freedom of leisure, being available more generally to working class people. This was very different than the idea of British socialists like William Morris, who really tried to reconnect work with craftsmanship so that art and craft and work would become re-entwined, that work would not be alienating but creative and fulfilling. And that's a vision of work that's sort of ever since gone in and out of focus as we think of it as something occasionally to aspire to, but so more often we think of it as something to try to do as little as possible of and get a way to become our real self in leisure. A contemporary example that I've been very taken with is the fiction of Kentucky writer Wendell Berry. And Berry is often thought of as a nature writer. But I think of him primarily as a writer about work. When he writes about rural life or farm life, or he is not just talking about taking walks in the woods. He's talking about what it means to run a farm and learn about the ecology of a place in depth, and to learn for yourself all the skills necessary to maintain subsistence livelihood. How to use the tools, how to plant, how to harvest, how to raise and take care of animals, how to build and repair a house. To the extent that he's writing about nature, he's writing about our nature as well as the capital N nature out there in the woods. And what does it mean to develop it and become who we are? It's a picture of great freedom and great naturalness, but it takes place entirely in the context of sometimes very hard work. Now, Zen, when it was first encountered by Whalen's generation, Snyder's generation, Alan Watts's generation, it was quickly identified with this kind of Hanshan-like wildness and freedom from. And only a very few members of that generation were able to make the step into the rigor of monastic training that gave them a glimpse of a whole other kind of freedom. In contrast to the freedom in this poem, I remember reading somewhere that someone asked D.T. Suzuki what was the essence of the freedom to be found in Zen. He replied, "The elbow doesn't bend backwards." It's not freedom of endless possibility. It's not a freedom from. It's a freedom to be really clear about what you are, how you function, what you can do, how to get to work.